This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
Jay Buhner just punched me in the kidney.
Power through the Alaska Airlines studio.
On Seattle Sports.
Well, we're going to do you on the interview.
Doesn't really work that way, Sherm. This is a show that has my name on it.
It kind of does, though.
Brought to you by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
Hello!
Yeah, rolling along, Brock and Salk, 2 days away from the NFL draft. And tonight, of course, we'll get first divisional series of the year for the Mariners, which is kind of cool. Brock, hi, good morning.
Good morning, Michael. Yes, it'd be nice to get after those Rangers, set the tone. So it's not just Fangraphs who's projecting us winning this division. You let those folks down there in Texas know this isn't 2023 anymore.
That's exactly right. It's a new sheriff in town.
That's exactly right.
Brock,
Logan Gilbert, yeah. Uh-huh.
2 days away. 2 days away from the draft.
Mm-hmm.
I keep coming back to Jared Verse.
Seriously?
I do. And I was thinking a lot about him last night. And maybe it was the Burt Breer thing that Moore sent over and his Monday morning quarterback saying that he made a little comp to Terrell Suggs. And it's like, well, that's kind of intriguing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started thinking about what we heard yesterday from our guy Joel Klatt and his thoughts on building a run wall and setting an edge. And so, you know, I just started thinking about what's on the team now and what it could look like with a guy who legitimately sets an edge and also does have the ability to get to the passer. And I wonder if that edge setting part of the run game is something that at least I'm not saying everybody that I have not focused on nearly enough.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly one of their defensive ends pretty good at it. Chenna Nwosu. That is seems to be a strength of his.
Yes.
I don't know the other side. The other side. I feel that way, right?
Yes.
I mean, Boye, I like him. I don't know if that's his strength, right? And if I always trust him to set an edge, Hall should be able to do that. He certainly got the body for it, but did he do it in any way well last year? No. And Daryl Taylor, obviously, just not something he does. So, like, I can't help but think that that position is really maybe of more need than we're given credit for.
Well, and you know, they gave an indicator, and I know that's a different staff with a whole new set of eyes and different scheme and maybe even some different teaching and philosophy, but they gave you an indicator, save for Uchenna, could anybody else do it consistently well enough? And that was no, because they had to move Dre Jones
right
to the outside last year. That was not in the cards. That was not in the plans. They wanted Dre inside. They wanted him to be their Justin Matabuike, right? Their disruptor, their penetrator. And they had to, once Uchenna went down and it was pretty rough for a few weeks, they had to slide him to the outside. So at least the previous staff give you a pretty good indicator of those three. That's not the strength of their game. Mm. Of Jared Verse, powerful man now. I mean, powerful man. And I saw that comp as well. And you're talking Terrell Suggs. That would be, sign me up for that.
Right.
Sign me up for Hall of Fame caliber.
Right. And that doesn't mean he's going to be as good as Terrell Suggs.
No, it's just the body type. It's just 260 pounds of rugged bully. It's, you know, benching 225, 31 times. It's then being, you know, productive enough and running 4-5 at that kind of size that, you know what, if this were a normal draft, Salk, without five quarterbacks, without five offensive tackles, without three generational receivers, you're not smelling Jared Verse anywhere around pick number 16. You can be top 10, but this class is pretty unique with some generational talent at quarterback, tackle, and three wide receivers in a needy league for that always, that there's a possibility Jared could be there at 16.
Well, and then I'll add to that, because I know we keep talking about how to build for success against the teams in your division, right? How do you stop San Francisco and their rushing attack? How do you stop LA and McVay's system? Isn't Jared Verse like a potential antidote for a lot of what those teams are trying to do to you? I mean, between setting an edge and funneling everything inside in the running game and what that can do for those little wide receiver handoffs and everything else they like to do with the ends coming around, and then again, the ability to drive somebody back into the passer and collapse the pocket, he feels like a pretty darn good fit, not just for what this team needs in general and for what is helpful to have in the NFL, but for what your division may be requiring right now.
Yeah,
so
I think that's why you made the move with your staff, too. I mean, that's why you brought in Mike McDonald to complicate things, because the oversimplification at times was shredded apart by the Shanahans and McVays, who knew exactly where you were and exactly what you were doing and could read the tea leaves pretty well. So I think that's why this staff is here. Did whet your appetite at all, seeing all the pictures yesterday on social of kind of the first little mini camp of the Seahawks, of seeing all the guys in their uniforms, of watching Jackson run around, of seeing Geno and Sam Hartman looking like Justin Barnes, if Justin Barnes were a football player with the hat backwards, flat brimmed, hoodie underneath the jersey. Did any of it kind of whet your appetite?
Of course.
Yeah.
You?
Anybody jump out to your eye, or were you just so focused on writing about Richard last night?
I was a little busy writing about Sherm, I'll be honest.
Yeah, you sent
over those pictures, and I was like, cool pictures.
Yeah. Nice.
I was a little focused on Sherm.
How'd that go?
Pretty well, actually. I gotta tell you, man, if you're looking for polarization and you're looking for people on every side of an issue and you want to take Yeah, there's a lot of agreement and a lot of disagreement on that one. You can go read the column if you want, seattlesports.com. Yeah. I was pretty proud of it, quite frankly. I thought it turned out pretty well, and I stand by it. I said this at 6. People say, oh, Salk, you're just making it personal with Sherm. Of course it's somewhat personal.
Oh, he made it personal with you. He kicked you off your own show. My name's on it.
I gotta say, of course it's a little bit personal. That would be ridiculous to assume that it's not.
You're a human.
I'm a human being. Of course there's a personal, issue with how all of that stuff went down.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what I would say is that all of that came from... Like, that wasn't the beginning. That was more the effect than the cause.
Yes.
And so you just kind of rewind it back.
It was him doing LeBron. I don't know if you heard any LeBron last time. No. I mean, LeBron gets so many calls. And then after the game, complains about New York, complains about the NBA headquarters. Like, are you delusional? Like, legitimately, you guys shoot 500 more free throws than anybody else in the league. Like, you get all – are you delusional? Sherm, are you delusional thinking there's not sound of you calling out Jim Moore? Like, it's on audio tape. How do you know it was me?
Right.
Like,
because there's audio.
Yeah.
So. Because there's tape of it. And this is pre-AI.
Sherm, when KJ and Cam and everybody's in your face like, bro, you busted the coverage. Like, are you delusional thinking, no, I didn't.
Well, and then what I would say is, but the main theme of this column is that, as usual, Sherm criticizing the Seahawks for taking down a couple of pictures is not about the Seahawks. It's not about, their franchise having success or what's best for them. It's about him.
Yes.
Like it always is. And like it was the day that he called into this show. That was absolutely about him, not about his teammate friend KJ.
Right.
It was about him and his personal deal. And so
And that hard-headedness also, and why it's polarizing, made him what he was.
Absolutely.
Made him Time's most interesting person, made him the mouthpiece of the Legion of Boom, shifted the arrogance level of fans here to not just sit on their hands, but to say it's okay to stick our chest out. It's okay to have a little bit of sports hubris. I mean, that's what made him tick too and made him great. It made him all that he was so stinking headstrong in that way. So I could see why it was polarized. And I asked you if you looked at pictures, because I think it's going to be a little surreal at every one of these little steps of the way. The first press conference with Mike and John, then the press conference with John and no Pete, right? And then kind of along the way here, as we've gone through these pressers and we're leading up to this day, and just seeing those pictures of Ryan Grubb on the field, seeing Mike McDonald running the show, seeing the guys kind of energized and no Pete. And no familiarity and no kind of all the staff that we gotten to know on the field for so long. Yeah, yesterday was just yet again one of those little mile markers in this journey of newness where you're like, wow, it really is new.
Gino's rocking those short shorts, huh?
Yeah, that's not his whole look doesn't do it for me.
No.
It's not doing it for me. No. The hair doesn't do it for me. The short shorts doesn't do it for me.
That's the thing though now. People are all wearing short shorts.
You know what? If you're Derek Hall, wear short shorts. If you're DK, wear short shorts.
The only Geno can. I mean, he's the fastest guy in the field.
I know. I guess
once you
so.
Do that, you can wear whatever the heck you want.
I guess so. He's running 21.7. Yeah. So go ahead.
Yeah, I think he can kind of wear whatever he wants, and I don't think he has to answer to you. Fastest guy on the field.
No, he does not.
Yeah,
certainly doesn't have
you
to.
Just
answer
wait
to
till
me.
He writes a whole column about you, Brock, talking about how I look. How do you look, Brock? And we can have a little conversation.
I look old. That's what I look.
All right. Well, speaking of this draft, and that's kind of where we started at 7:30 this morning. Brock, you have wanted to take some calls, and we're going to do that. We're going to do that at 7:30. We're going to ask people a simple question. Uh-huh. If Michael Penix is there at 16, yes or no?
Yep.
And explain why. So we'll do that coming up in 20-866-979-3776. Phone number right after everything you need to know next on Brock and Salk.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, Brock, in 2 days, the rumors and all of the mocking will go away, and we'll finally see what the Seahawks have in store for their future. I mean, I guess not all the mocking. I'll be mocking more after I beat her in the race. But for now, we have a bunch more rumors and mocks. Albert Breer writing yesterday that folks around the league keep linking the Seahawks to Washington quarterback Michael Penix. We're going to ask people here in a few minutes whether or not you would like them to move in that direction. Joel Klatt on with us yesterday says if they do, they're getting that dude.
And this dude is asked to sit there and sling it, man. And he did it as well as anybody. He passes the football, not throws. He passes the football down the field as well as anybody. If he goes to the right spot, I do believe Michael Penix can be a quarterback that leads a franchise to a potential Super Bowl. And because of that, and no other reason, I think he would be the one that I would kind of vote for pick of who are we going to be talking about in 10 years.
Okay, so if he's there, Brock, do you take him?
Well, of course. And the only reason I didn't do that in my latest mock, which, by the way, comes out, it's out today, Joel Klatt Show. It's a shameless plug. Don't worry about it. Nice. It's what us professionals do. I agree. I don't think he's going to be there. Okay. I really believe we're going to have all six of these guys taken before the Seattle pick.
Oh, part of the reason I need to talk to the people in 10 minutes about this, Saul, because it pains me. Like, you would think I'm that guy. I mean, he's a Husky, for crying out loud. He's a lefty, even more so. I mean, lefties don't come around that often. He's got gigantic hands and throws a beautiful spiral. I mean, you'd think I would be the one leading this parade and leading this charge and not Joel Klatt. And I kind of was, and now that we're getting closer to it.
Lost your nerve.
And the needs of this team arise, and I can't get away from where it all starts anyway, which is at the line of scrimmage. So if you even wanted someone like Lefty Penix, he'd take such a beating, as Geno at times has taken a beating, if you don't get it right up front. That's where it's got to start for me.
Well, he did mention some other guys who are up front. Burke Breer, I'm talking about. He says Jared Verse and Cooper DeJean are options. DeJean would be real hard for me in the first round, man. Going to another skill position away from the line of scrimmage, that would be challenging for me. But that Terrell Suggs
comp. The next Jason Sehorn?
Yeah, no thanks. Terrell Suggs comp Verse is just so intriguing. Anyways, you mentioned Seahawks conducting a voluntary 3-day mini camp this week. This is something
didn't look too voluntary to me, man.
Yeah.
Not look too voluntary
to me. Well, this is one of the advantages you get for having a new coach, and then they'll have their mandatory mini camp coming up in June.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
All right, first real test of the season. It's tonight. Mariners play their first series against a division foe. And yes, it's the defending champion Rangers, who gave them fits last season on their way to winning the title. This is not going to tell us for sure anything about which of these teams is built better, but it's a little snapshot in time and a glimpse into maybe how they plan to approach each other this season as they vie for positioning in the division. What do you need to do to win? John Morosi told Wyman and Bob.
The number one and number two hitters for Texas. They're always the ones that I'm focused on the most. Semien and Seager. And if you can control them and then make sure that when Garcia comes to the plate that the bases are as empty as possible, that is a really key element of success. And certainly Nathaniel Lowe is back in the lineup and getting his way back into that routine. Of course, over the weekend was the first game action he'd had all season long because of an oblique injury. Wyatt Langford is still finding his way as a young major league hitter. Going to be a star, I think, but not quite yet. Very similar, and actually he's playing better right now than what Jackson Holliday has played for Baltimore.
It's interesting. His take on them sounds pretty similar to what we heard from Passan in the morning.
Yeah, a little bit, and it's a little bit of what you talk about. You know, on the flip side, hey, man, JP and Julio, get it going. Top of the lineup's got to set the table for everybody else. You're difference makers. This is great. This is one of those pitching versus hitting. You know, kind of like in the NFL, when you get a great offense versus a great defense, the Broncos versus the Seahawks. Let's go. You built your team with a great hitting lineup, basically 1 through 9. We got a great pitching rotation, 1 through 5+. So let's see our strength on your strength, how it all plays out. Also, remember, it was after that Texas series at the very end of the year, right? That just stung, and where you were snubbed by a game. The Cal was the one that said, you know, we need a little more. Because he knows that Rangers group, especially offensively, got a little bit more to contend with. Hopefully Logan gets it started tonight, and that pitching trumps that elite hitting.
Well, the pitching looks like this. Logan, as you said, in game one against Dane Dunning, Bryce Miller tomorrow against John Gray, and then The Rock, Luis Castillo, takes it in the final game against Andrew Heaney.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
I mentioned this earlier. I cannot believe the text Maura sent us last night. I have just been like down rabbit hole on this.
Which one?
Saying that Morgan Geeky, who she happened to look up yesterday, scored a playoff goal. She's like, oh, I did a little research. Guy scored 19 goals and had 20 assists for Boston this year. That's two more goals, two more points than Matty Beniers had. Not like he played on a top line like Beniers. Not that he averages many minutes. That is a rough commentary, first of all, on Beniers' season. But then I started digging myself, and I'm like, okay, let's look at that fourth line from that last year. Geeky had 19. Daniel Sprong had 18. That's 37 goals. Both of those guys, Brock, would have finished third and fourth on the Kraken in goals scored this year. And, oh, by the way, Ryan Donato, who they jettisoned also, had another 12. I appreciate that they wanted to change things up at the bottom, but they blew it. It didn't work.
Is that why old Ronnie was on the old airwaves talking about the defense, this being Ron Francis? Mm-hmm. The GM was pretty good defensively, pretty solid. But offensively, nowhere near good enough.
No, they were not where they wanted to be.
I think we were first in shooting percentage last year. This year, we're 28th. We're fourth, I think, in goals for last year, and this year, we're 29th. So that's an area we certainly have to look at, is to try and figure out why it didn't happen. And then
I think I figured it out. You let go of an 18, 19, and 12 goal scorer on your fourth line. I figured it out for you. There you go.
Oh, thanks, Mike.
Well, also, appreciate he's going to have to make a decision on his coach, Dave Hakstol. He said something should be coming within the next couple of days. That is everything you need to know. Quarter past every hour here on the Brock and Salk Show. Do you think Hakstol's gone?
It would be so naive of me to think I have like a strong enough opinion. I only base this, my gut would say that Todd Leiwicki at the very top, a little bit like, again, Jody Allen. I hate to bring everything back to football, but that's a little bit of my lenses. Todd Leiwicki is not one that's going to sit on his hands.
No.
They've invested an incredible amount of resources, incredible amount of time, beautiful building. Like, let's go. Let's go. This thing's got to go in a linear direction, right? It's got to go in a direction that we trust, or if it didn't go in that way, you better have answers to as to why and how you're going to fix it.
No, so. I agree with you. I wouldn't be surprised either way. I mean, this could kind of go in either direction, but I think a lot of what you said is true. On the ice, is Hakstol the guy? Maybe, maybe not. But you are looking at, after year three, a lot of those season tickets that are not rolling over, and you're just looking for some reason to be excited about a team that kind of nosedived this year and went in the wrong direction. So maybe a more familiar name, maybe another coach, maybe something is able to light a fire under these guys that they just didn't have this past year. All right.
Well,
you ready to ask the question, Brock?
Yeah,
your question.
I mean, this is the 7:30 audience, right?
I know,
they
don't generally call.
They don't?
No, this is going to be tough.
Because they're kind of in the car heading to work?
They're in the car. They're almost at work. This just isn't like a caller time. So this is a daring experiment.
It is. I mean, the people on Twitter responded.
Sure.
I put it out there. I just said, hey, okay, come on, Seahawks fans, 12s, football fans, Husky fans. Michael Penix is there at 16 in, what, a little over 48 hours, 60 hours. He's sitting there at 16 for you with the Seattle Seahawks. Do you want John and Mike to take him? Pretty simple. And I'll tell you, man, 40% no, over 40% no kind of struck me, you know? So it was still a little bit tilted in the positive, but for our market and the need for a quarterback and the familiarity with a guy that took the Huskies to the very highest mountaintop, right? 14 wins, 14-0, second in the Heisman, all of the things that he accomplished. I'm just really curious out there, Seahawks fans in particular, if Penix is on the board at 16, are you going to be screaming at your TV, lefty, lefty, Penix, Penix, take him, take
Nobody's
him.
Screaming lefty at their TV, but are you asking for it to happen?
Come on, Penix!
866-979-3776, the phone number. As I told Brock,
keep him home!
I don't know if this is a good idea to take calls this early in the morning, but we'll give it a shot because it's a simple question. If Michael Penix is there at 16, you want the Seahawks to take him? 866-979-3776. It's next on Brock and Salk.
You're listening to Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Well, so you must have woken up the 7:30 crowd, Brock. They are active. 866-979-3776. Simple question.
Would you call them the smartest crop of callers, typically?
The 7:30?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they're up early enough to be heading to work.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's generally a good sign.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
9:30 is kind of sleeping in, still PJs, maybe retired. So it's just, I mean, incredibly bright
it's
as well.
All over the map, I would say, yes. At 9:30. 6:30, you still get some people who are still up and then others who were, you know, awake early. So that's kind of a big mix.
We've been up all night.
It's kind of like a brackish period of our callers. But yeah, I would say 7:30 is right near the top. So let's hit it. Michael Penix is there at 16. You want him, Zach and Puyallup. You get the first word. What's up?
Yeah, I think I'm all over him. I'm yelling at my screen. Lefty, lefty, lefty. If he's there, we got to take him. I think he's the most pro quarterback I see in the draft. So what about the injuries? Look what he's done since. I think he has the arm. I think he has the brain. I think he has the talent to be a pretty gosh darn good NFL quarterback, if not great. I don't want to say great yet because, of course, you never know. But I think he's definitely there. We take him. Only sad part is I think he's going to be available for Oakland, and I think that's where he might go. But if he's there, let's take him. Let's bring him here to Seattle, bring him home, and let's go get that championship.
So much I like about that call, Salk. So much I like about that. And he started with the lefty thing, kind of paid homage to me, the Puyallup thing where he's from, the fact that he thinks the Raiders are still in Oakland because they're totally irrelevant and their brand is dead. Sorry, Wolf, right? They've not won since the 80s. There's so much to like about that. Can you help me? Help me understand why I'm not Zach, why I'm not Klatt, why I'm not out leading the charge. Why am I not doing that? You heard me. I mean, the Apple Cup, the Oregon game. I've got to call his games.
You know why? Because you see too much of yourself in him.
You think so?
Yes. I've been thinking about it.
The Players Tribune article would be something Brock would love, too. Like, it was so up your alley.
So good.
All of these things are true. I'm happy to play therapist here if you need me to.
Let's go to some more calls.
If you need me to play therapist,
we can do this
simple.
A little bit later.
I think Salk is right. Did I just say that?
Well, I mean, it happens on pretty much a daily basis. You just don't usually say it out loud.
Well, Zach and Klatt are both right in this regard, in the fact that there is more tape that you can project to what the NFL asks you to do.
Right.
He has pitched against major league hitters with major league stuff.
Look, I know I'm no draft Nick, but I am, as we've mentioned before, a quarterback aficionado.
That's true.
Right. Isn't that what I said about Penix like 4 months ago?
Well, after the one game that you watched in totality.
Get out of here. I watched a bunch of the games and I said, look, Michael Penix does things NFL quarterbacks do. He should be a top 15 pick in this draft. If he's there, be hard to say that the Seahawks shouldn't take him unless there's something John Schneider doesn't like about him. 866-979-3776. Adam's in Maryland. Hi, Adam. Good morning.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good.
I'm a hard no. And look, I'm a Michigan homer, but been to three games this year. Went to the Rose Bowl. But I think it has to be concerning when you watch Michael Penix play against an NFL-style, NFL-talent defense like Michigan. And he struggled terribly.
So just out of curiosity, because I did not watch every Michigan game the way you did. Did any quarterback not struggle against them? Don't they have like an unbelievable defense that kind of beat up everybody?
But the point is, at the next level, they're going to be even better.
But his players are going to be better too.
Week in and week out. They're going to be better than what he saw, and he struggled mightily against them. It wasn't Oregon's defense. It wasn't Texas's defense. And he struggled. I mean, that was a really bad game at the biggest moment.
I would say, though, Adam, the next closest, and you mentioned him right there. Thank you for the hard opinion. The other two NFL-esque defenses, he shredded three times against Oregon. That's loaded. When we asked Troy Fontana the other day, the best defensive player he faced, was it a Michigan guy? Was it a Texas guy? No, it was Brandon Dorlus at Oregon. And Oregon had a bunch of dudes up front, Dorlus included, that'll probably be a third-round pick, and linebackers and corners that can run, and Texas's D-line. Heck, I've profiled both Sweat and Murphy that were breathing down his neck, and he was stepping around them and stepping up in the pocket and absolutely just torching the back end of that defense that also will have a nickel and a corner that gets drafted into the NFL. So he did play, you know, against a few other defenses that had NFL dudes, and he lit them up, like the 4th of July.
All right.
I also feel like people don't really mention that, like, once Dylan Johnson got hurt very early on, they didn't even attempt to run the ball. Like, Geno Smith doesn't look good when the Seahawks can't run the ball at all either.
Yeah, I struggle with that as a reason for, like, okay, he didn't play well against Michigan, or at least he didn't lead his team past Michigan in the championship game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there's any shame in saying he lost to the best team in the league this year that went undefeated. I mean, I just, they whipped up on Ohio State. They beat up on everybody they saw. I just, that one's hard for me. 866-979-3776. If Michael Penix is there at 16, should the Seahawks do it? Bob's in Buckley. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning. Hey, I would take him, no doubt. I would even trade up to get him. I think we have the perfect scenario where he can learn from Geno for a year, and we don't have to throw him in the fire yet. And then with Grubb as the offensive coordinator, hey, I'm so far into it, I got to go to Cougar Country, and I'm wearing my Penix jersey Thursday at the Dale Red in Soap Lake. I want him bad.
Wow, you do want him bad. They still got that, call that in Buckley, where they chop down logs and chainsaws and all that stuff. They still got that competition out there in Buckley?
Oh, yeah, the Buckley Logging Show. Hey, Brock, I'm actually Logger Bob.
Oh, you are Logger Bob. Thank you. Oh, I love Logger Bob. Thank you, Logger Bob. I love all the State of Washington references right there. And Logger Bob also brought up something we've hardly talked about in this whole discussion. Ryan Grubb. Like he walks in, Salk, unlike so many in the NFL, like Cam Newton or others that came into the league with, you know, these systems that were so simple in college, right? Matt Corral down at Ole Miss to the NFL. Like, hold on, what do I got to call? What is this play? What am I doing? What are these formations? What am I looking at? You know, instead of the learning curve that JJ and Jaden and Caleb and a bunch of these guys are going to do at the next level, there's no learning curve. Like, this is multiple years
right into it.
In this system of comfort, right? And that is a huge, huge advantage for a Penix, and probably one of the most convincing arguments I can make. If I could get over the body enduring, if I could get over the frame, and you could tell me, Brock, he'll be fine. He's not you. He's not a wuss. Okay? He's not super
wuss.
Yeah. You know, he's got a little more cushion. He can handle the beating better than you could. Like, get over it. If you could tell me in a crystal ball, Salk, that body is going to survive.
It's not the body. It's the fact that he can run. Like, you couldn't avoid it. And Brock, we've talked about this before. You had a little bit of paralysis by analysis.
Yes.
You went to go to the wrong coach. I'm not saying Holmgren was a bad coach. I don't think he was the right coach for you. And none of those things would necessarily be true of Penix. He'd be going to a defensive coach. He'd be going to his own offensive coordinator, who he's already had success with. And he can run. What did he just run, like a 4.5, 4.6, 40? What did you run? 5.1.
Don't worry about it.
Come on.
Yes,
what are Moore and I going to run next week or later this week? 866-979-3776. Let's go to Russ in Phoenix. What's up, Russ? What would you do if Penix is there at 16?
Well, I'm with Brock that I just feel like that line needs to be shored up. I mean, I would hate to bring in Penix and put him behind a line that can't protect him. I mean, we saw it in the Michigan game where he just got beat up. And you see year after year after year, talented quarterbacks that go into the league and just get washed up when they just can't succeed on a team. And the Hawks offensive line is just been nothing to protect. And I mean, I'm really excited to see what Huff and Grubb can do for this offensive line. But, I mean, I really just want to see that line shored up.
So this isn't even, Russ, for you, this isn't even as much about Penix, right? This isn't even much about Penix, about the team, about the team build. And I'm also leaning into that, Salk, a little bit, that for the reason that I'm a little nervous about the durability and the sustainability, and then throw on top that you want to build this team. Heck, you wrote about this early on. Like, you want to build this team from the line of scrimmage out. Right, you have all these construction concerns that poor John Schneider had to mention to Bob and Dave, you know, on top of you getting ready to run against Moore and everything else. You have all these concerns about the roster construction, and you're going to take a quarterback when you got Geno and you already traded for a quarterback? You're going to take a quarterback instead of take care of the line scrimmage?
I'm okay with them doing that. And I think that, you know, we have a tendency to shorten points, right? The point we always say is, all right, the offensive line or the line of scrimmage is the most important. Well, yeah, except for quarterback. Like when I keep saying that, it's more important than your secondary. It's more important than your wide receivers and running backs. It's more important to be great up front, but nothing's more important than the franchise quarterback. To me, this is fairly simple. If you truly believe he is a franchise-changing quarterback, then you take him at 16. And if you don't, then you don't. That is the end of it for me. If you think he changes your franchise, then you'll get a guard somewhere else. If you think that he changes your franchise, you'll get a center somewhere else.
So if Troy Fautanu and Penix are both on the board for Mike Salk Thursday night, what do you want them doing?
What do I want them to
do? Yes, what do you...
It's a hard thing, Brock. I feel bad not giving you a straight answer.
You love the Jim Harbaugh sound. We all love the Jim Harbaugh sound. The one group that is not dependent upon anybody else.
Right.
The quarterback is, to Russ's point, the quarterback is dependent on those guys up front.
But the quarterback is the one who makes it all go, man. If you have an opportunity to add a franchise quarterback now, you can get your Troy Fautanu next year or whenever. And I'm not saying that that's, like, ideal, but... When franchise quarterbacks come around,
Penix in that kind of a
scene. I didn't say that. If you do, then you have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't, okay, fine. Like, if you don't think he's that guy, if you think he's good, not great, if you think that there's just, he's got some talents, we like him, but we don't think he changes the entirety of your team, then no, you probably don't. You have enough other holes that you probably go in another direction rather than taking that risk. But I to me, this is about their evaluation of Penix and nothing else. It should have nothing to do with your roster construction. Franchise quarterbacks are separate from any of that. They're in their own category.
Yeah, and I can tend to be a little hard on these quarterbacks through the years and some that have been overdrafted and everything. Like, if Drake May were there at 16, I don't think I'd take Drake May.
Right.
Like, I just don't feel that. I don't feel a leader of men. I don't feel what Klatt said. Like, this guy can lead you to a Super Bowl. That is a high, high bar to drop the confetti. And very, very, very few do you go into it thinking, yep, you can do it with this guy. And Joel sees it with Penix. God bless him. I know many others do. And he may even be, according to some, off the board in the top 10 of this draft. And this will be a totally moot conversation. But as of now, it's not. So give me one more.
All right, let's go to Brandon, and also in Phoenix. What's up, Brandon? Good morning.
Jeez, we're big in Phoenix.
Yeah. Morning, guys. How are you?
Huge. Yeah, I mean, think about what they have to listen to.
You like Murata.
I love Beckley and Murata. Those guys are awesome. I'm just kidding.
All right, go ahead. Sorry.
No, they're okay.
Oh, no, they're great. Beckley and Murata do a great show. Seriously.
They do.
Jokes aside, that's our sister station in Phoenix. Those guys do an incredible show. They are two of the most talented people in our business.
Yeah.
They do, but honestly, you guys are one of the best sports shows I've ever listened to in my life.
Oh my
gosh.
I feel so good.
Thank you.
So nice. I needed that this morning.
Felt so good off your lips. Okay.
Really nice.
So,
thank you.
Right, so you're taking Penix at 16 if he's on the board, my man. What are we doing?
No, I want a lineman. I want a lineman or a pass rusher. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of tag teaming on Russ, who lives down here too, but I don't want quarterback. I want build that line, open some holes for your running game. Or a game-wrecking pass rusher. I want to see that line shored up on either side of the ball.
Yeah. I appreciate the phone call. Thank you for the very kind, affirming words as well.
Salk, nice. Yeah.
It reminds me, I'll tell you what just comes to my mind, listening to Russ, listening to you talk about franchise quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. You know who comes to my mind, actually, is crazy-eyed Adam Gase. Remember Adam Gase?
Yeah, kinda, I do. Yeah. Oof. How could I forget him?
Remember those eyes at the press conference?
Oh, yeah.
They were tough. Well, Adam Gase, the year I did the NFL, I did one of their games. Actually, his biggest win as a head coach. Beat the Rams with the Jets. So they were like huge underdogs, everything else. And we were on the production call. He said, you know what, man? Mahomes has screwed so many people in this league. Not even as a player. Not even what he does on the field. But he is so freaking good. He is so incredible at the craft that it just makes like everybody think, well, you can find the next Mahomes. Well, go develop the next Mahomes. Like, see, Mahomes can make up and he can compensate and he can erase for all these things. That's what a franchise quarterback does. Like, that bar, I mean, it would have been really interesting to watch Aaron Rodgers behind that Jets O-line this year. It would have been really interesting watching him take a beating. And, you know, it was a fluky. It
didn't last very long.
No, a couple plays. And that was a fluky deal as he had to scramble out of there and everything else. But it would have been really interesting to watch one of these others. You know, I mean, there's very few, quote-unquote, franchise. Look at Joe Burrow.
Mm-hmm.
He's been knocked out of two of his 3 years as a starter. He can't sustain, right? When he's upright and he's available, great. He's awesome.
Yeah, and he went to a Super Bowl.
He can't sustain.
But he also brought them to a Super Bowl, man.
He did. He also ended 2 years.
If you have a chance for a franchise quarterback, you have to take it. Now, if you don't think Penix is that guy, that's fine. I don't know whether he's that guy either. I don't know whether he's worth taking that chance. And if you don't, then yeah, I'm with Brandon. You absolutely go offensive line, defensive line, pass rusher. I mean, like, you go build those positions that are less dependent. But come on, if there's a franchise quarterback that you truly believe is going to be that, Brock, if you think he's Dan Marino, Jim Kelly,
also remember these teams. Also,
John Elway.
Also remember pre-Mahomes. I mean, Peyton won a Super Bowl with one arm. His brother Eli won a couple Super Bowls with great defenses. You know, Russ, yes, he was a magician, but got to two Super Bowls.
I'm just looking at that. I know that neither Marino nor Kelly ended up winning a Super Bowl, but if this is the 83 quarterback draft all over and you think that you have John Elway, Dan Marino, or Jim Kelly, you take him and you go compete for Super Bowls. But if you think this is Tony Eason, Ken O'Brien, or Todd Blackledge, you pass and get either a defensive lineman or offensive lineman and
look,
go from there.
Look at you. Great name, Pulse.
Hey, I got you. I'm there for that 83 quarterback draft. Let's ask Brock some football questions.
This is Brock and Salk's Blue 88.
Blue 88! Blue 88!
We take you to the field as Brock Huard breaks down three football questions as only he can.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
You know
what?
There's some of these things that are just stuck in your head. Some
that one's
of these songs
gonna be stuck in my head.
The McDonald's Big Mac.
12 beef patty, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, onions on a sesame seed bun. That one.
There's some things that no matter how old we get, no matter how much CTE kicks in for me and just old age for you, there's just going to be some things that are locked in that old brain of ours.
Like the entire Good Morning Vietnam speech, never going anywhere. What can I tell you? Like scenario, just anytime you pull on, I'm threat to start rapping.
I mean, the Lamar rap?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just it's not the Revenge of the Nerds, right? I ain't going anywhere.
What are you
going
to do? All right, question number one, Brock. Seahawks are at minicamp right now. One thing that is carried over from Kalen DeBoer's staff at UW.
Yeah, yes and no. I've got to finalize this a little further. I was looking at the picture of Ryan Grubb talking in the walkie-talkie, and they did that over the years, communicating. But I there's going to be a higher level of communication, I think, amongst that staff on the field during practice time. That will carry over. That was one of Kalen's great, great strengths. I remember talking to Pete about it off the air, actually, on one of our Mondays. Like, gosh, this is so savvy of them to me. Much like the officials are wired up, Salk, now, think about the officiating from our day and age.
No.
Good Morning Vietnam, Revenge of the Nerds. You know, those guys were not all on the same page. They could not all talk to each other. Now, I think even at the high school level, they all have the ability, they all got the technology, certainly at every college game I do in the NFL, to talk to each other. And it's fascinating. The UFL provides insight into that as you're listening to the white hat, the referee, talk to the back judge. And okay, what are the number? What are you seeing here? You know, you just get everybody on the same page. Kalen and Grubb and crew did all of that at UW practice across the multiple fields and everything else, so you could be in constant communication. I believe that will be a carryover here for the Seahawks.
All right, question number two. Give me a couple of Seahawks that just looked good so far here in April.
I mean, just early videos, early pictures. But, you know, shout out to Mr. Marr over there who takes some of the best photos in the land, and the Seahawks team and the digital team putting stuff out. Charles Cross looks really good.
Oh, good.
Yes. He looks really, really fit.
That's important.
That's super, super important. And I think coming off of kind of a freakish, unfortunate injury, and he's had a little turf toe, and it's not been major stuff, and knowing that, okay, it's kind of go time. Kind of go time for me to prove that I'm one of these elite guys, and I made a whole lot of money as a top 10 pick, but you make generational game-changing money by getting that second contract. And, man, he looks tremendously fit. Almost Dwayne Brown-esque. You know, one of those, like, wow. There is nothing jiggling when that dude is running.
Like
so that is a positive sign. And just, you know, looking at Jackson yesterday, and Moore and I and Justin were chatting about what is the ceiling for Jackson Smith and Jigba. He was the first receiver. And it just goes to show you year to year how different the market can be. I mean, this year's first three receivers are Malik Nabers and Marvin Harrison Jr. and Roma Dunze. And, like, Jackson would not have been anywhere near those guys. You know, if he were in this draft, he'd
just
be...
Just because of the style of receiver.
Yeah, just because those are all bona fide outside number ones. And Jackson and Zay Flowers, who went right behind him, are both kind of the Amon-Ra St. Browns, right? The inside guys. But right now, Jackson looks, again, like a guy determined. He should be. Also had a brutal injury there in the preseason that kind of slowed him down. And I want that guy to be Amon-Ra St. Brown plus. I want him to be Tyler Lockett plus. That's what he needs to be when you took him there in the first round with a number 20 overall pick.
God, that just kind of upsets me. All right, question number three. Bothered by that. You're that's gonna eat at me.
I know it does, because you're gonna say, well, why did he do that?
Yeah,
the roster construction and everything else. If you knew the following year's draft had all these other, you know, 6, 7, 8 wide receivers, you gotta
not
read them.
Not even just that, but like if he's not truly worthy of that.
Of
like
what?
If in a different year he's not going even in the top first round or top 20 like that?
Oh, I think he'd still it'd be an interesting question to our text that to Matt Miller. And I'll shoot that over to a couple of my guys. He would still be a first round. He just is a different receiver than those guys.
Okay.
And maybe even number 4 and 5 in this draft, because they're all bigger bodied 4'3" elite freak show kind of dudes. So.
All right. Question number three, Mike McDonald over. And I want to talk more about this coming up next at the UW coaching clinic. What did you hear from him?
Ooh, a lot. Holy cow. If you were excited about Geeky, if you geeked out about that text from Maura, I liked her show notes that she sent over to us with just a bunch of his. Yeah, this is a whole lot deeper than just a Blue 88 answer, but it is how he wants to equip his guys and how he's going to teach his guys and how they're going to teach the scheme and what he's going to ask of them to do, Salk. And it kind of just continues this theme. You know, it's not, hey, we want to be aggressive. Like the former D coordinator said, it's much deeper than that. It's a lot more, from the neck up. Guys are going to be thinking, and we talked about this, I think, a couple weeks ago, that illusion of complexity.
Mm-hmm.
You are going to be complex in what you look like to that offense. That offense and that quarterback should never be like Sam Howell said to us. Yeah, I love playing the Seahawks. That was fun for me. I knew exactly where they were going to be. That should never, ever happen again.
But while still keeping it simple enough for people to understand their job.
It's simple enough for you. It looks complex. There's an illusion of it, but we keep it simple enough so we can fly around and wreak havoc on you.
That is today's Blue 88 Every Day with Brock. We ask those three good football questions at 7:45, especially fun draft time, as we are just a couple days away from this draft. Yes, Mike McDonald spoke yesterday at the UW Coaching Clinic.
A couple weeks ago.
When was it? We just got the article yesterday.
Yes,
excuse me, from John
yesterday.
Boyle.
Yes.
This was what, over last weekend?
Yeah,
or weekend
about
before?
10 days ago.
Fair
or
enough.
So. Yep.
But we got the article yesterday from John Boyle. So we started to kind of see, you know, what he said. And Brock, there are two quotes in here that I think we have to read to people, and you guys have to react to them, because when you hear it, it probably tells us as much about what he wants to do and how he wants to build this as anything we've heard. Stick around. It's next on Brock and Salk.